You know, speaking about my origins, if you go to Provence and you take a highway, you go quicker. If you go to Provence and you take those little roads with curves and detours, you can see and enjoy beautiful flavors, landscape, lights. I loved recording these two versions.
French conductor Louis Langrée has recorded two different versions of An American in Paris by George Gershwin. One is more of an abbreviated version. The other is an extended version, the one the composer originally intended. You'll hear about both of those versions in this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media and much more. It's a new recording called Transatlantic. I'm Julie Amacher. Enjoy. I'm talking with Louis Langrée, the music director and conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you, Julia. Great pleasure for me.
One of the things that you've said about working with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra is that it's made you a better conductor. Can you explain that a little bit more? How have you grown as a conductor?
Well, you know, I think it's a very 20th century to imagine that they could be the ideal conductor, not only actually in music, but in this cult of personality that is so related to a fantasy and not reality. It's not about this deus ex machina, this powerful figure. It's the reality is completely different. It's a collective journey. We are building something together. We have, especially with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, but with any society or community, everybody brings what they have, what they are, and they share it with the others. And I think I've added some colors in the palette of this orchestra. And certainly, when I said they have made me a better conductor, they have given to me so many more sensitivity to accuracy, precisions of the attack, pulse, rhythm. I came from a world where the rubato or taking time for a modulation or this flexibility is absolutely essential. American orchestras quite often have a very vertical view of music, like in the architecture with all these skyscrapers. But what I loved with this orchestra from our first concerts together 7 years ago, I could feel that they have these two dimensions, the flexibility of the shape of the phrasing and also this absolute rigor and clarity. So there is no ideal conductor, but certainly they could be ideal relationship when everybody bring to the other side something which will make this relationship fertile and fruitful. And I think it's the case, and I'm deeply happy about it.
Your new recording with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra is titled Transatlantic, and it highlights not one but two versions of George Gershwin's An American in Paris. You, however, are a Parisian in America, so I'm curious how that may have influenced the music that you chose for this recording and this project.
Well, when you look every month to the amount of new recordings, you feel that in order not to be flooded in this mass of new versions of Beethoven symphonies, etc. We wanted to show something unique and specific. And to speak about my relation with the orchestra as ex-Parisian, working now in America with an American orchestra, speaking about the music and the ties between America and France. And certainly, I mean, it comes from both sides, this fascination. Ravel was definitely influenced by Gershwin. Nadia Boulanger certainly influenced all her students, Bernstein, Copland, Carter, Philip Glass, Varese. Isn't it amazing to imagine that he had connection with Gabriel Fauré and with Frank Zappa? So I think there are so many bridges which are so important in the history of art, in the history of the world. And I know now we speak much more often about walls, but these bridges are absolutely essential on any level, and certainly on my level as a musician. So we have an American in Paris. We have a Frenchman going to America, Varese, with Amérique. And we have Stravinsky, the composer, who wrote the two first movements of his Symphony in C in France. And the two last in the US. And certainly you can feel the difference of vibe, the difference of energy, the difference even of structure of the piece. And I wanted also, because this is something I discovered by coming in Cincinnati, the amazing vibrancy and of the history of the CSO, you know, inviting from the very first years leading composers to perform their own pieces with the orchestra. So we had in the beginning Strauss, Elgar, Camille Saint-Saëns, Scriabin, Rachmaninoff, they all came to Cincinnati. Then after that, the next generation, we had Gershwin, we had Stravinsky, we had Copland, etc., etc. I mean, many, many composers who come in Cincinnati to perform. And the three composers here performed with the CSO. Varese came in 1918, just before starting the composition of Amérique. Stravinsky conducted three times the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and conducted his own symphony in C. Gershwin performed with Fritz Reiner his concerto in F, his Rhapsody in Blue, and came to Cincinnati to supervise the performances, the concerts of An American in Paris. So it's such a fantastic history that we should make people sensitive to that. And also it speaks about our DNA, our artistic DNA. And this, so I think this is not one more CD. It's a very specific recording speaking about something which is so strong, emblematic, and unique for all of us.
You have two world premiere recordings on this transatlantic 2-CD disc, and one is the original unabridged version of An American in Paris. The other is the standard abridged version. Tell me about why it was important to have both of these on this recording, and what are we hearing? What are the differences in the pieces, and why was this the first time that they've ever been recorded?
Well, the abridged version is actually the traditional length of music, number of bars that we know. But Gershwin, after the first rehearsals, cut some bars, probably to have a more concise piece, because these 104 bars comes from different places in the development. So by shortening the development, you go quickly to the point and to the end of the piece. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for any people who loves Gershwin's music to be aware of these cut bars and to listen to them, and also to have something which is quite noticeable. So it's like, you know, speaking about my origins, if you go to Provence and you take a highway, you go quicker. If you go to Provence and you take those little roads with curves and detours, you can see and enjoy beautiful flavors, landscape, lights. I loved recording these two versions. The other very important differences, for decades the only printed version existing was An American in Paris, with the arrangement of Frank Campbell Watson, who arranged the piece, reorchestrated some passages after Gershwin's death. So we wanted to go to the Urtext, to the original idea of Gershwin. And the sound of Gershwin is, I think, very different than the Campbell Watson. Campbell Watson, for instance, added slurs on some passages, which give a very lush expression. For instance, this motif, which comes many, many times, which is, of course, legato, lush. But this is not from Gershwin. Gershwin wrote with this syncopation that you, and then you can feel the rhythmical life. So incisive and so exciting, actually. And this is what Gershwin wrote. There are also some places where Campbell Watson thought, oh, this must be a misprint because there is a dissonance which is probably not very seducing. Let's get rid of the dissonance. So he got rid of it in the trombones, but let it in the saxophones. Well, either you take it out or not. So we play what Gershwin wrote, and I mean, either you feel a dissonance is disturbing, or you feel that this dissonance is adding so much color and flavor to the piece. He also, on the jazz part, rearranged what Gershwin had wrote initially. Gershwin had wrote the saxophone parts for three players playing eight instruments in total, including a trio of soprano saxophones, which is unique. And Campbell Watson probably thought that, oh my God, this is going to be too complicated. Let's have three players and only playing alto, tenor, and baritone saxophone. Well, it's a completely different color. And he added also some timpani rolls, some heavy percussion to make it, of course, very impressive. But I think the original version is even more impressive because it has this green precision and sometimes almost acidity, which is absolutely wonderful. And it's probably the difference between a Hollywood sound and a New York sound.
That was a wonderful description. Thank you so much for that. So when you're referring to Campbell Watson, that is the person who did the arrangement of the standard abridged version?
Yes, absolutely. And again, I mean, before this new edition, it was the only available edition. So I had conducted the Campbell Watson version, not knowing at all that it was not Gershwin, because on the front page, no, it says revised and arranged by Campbell Watson, but I didn't know what was revised, and I didn't know that it was so heavily revised. So, you know, it's like restoring a painting. Is it a completely different piece? No. But suddenly, after the restoration, you are aware of little details which actually give a totally different impression. There is also this famous and probably the most noticeable one, which is the pitch of the taxi horns. Gershwin came to Cincinnati with the taxi horns that he had bought in Paris, and he brought them to Cincinnati to be sure to have the right instruments. And probably some musician or conductors thought that just reducing the weird dissonance of this taxi horn would make a much more civilized musical environment. I can tell you, if you go Place de la Concorde or Rond-Point des Champs-Élysées on a rush hour, there is nothing civilized about the behavior of people in Paris there. And I think when you have this weird dissonance going from very high to very low, it's just more enjoyable. Is it weird? Yes, but I think Gershwin wanted it to sound like that.
Can you tell me what the role of the George Gershwin family was in the process of getting this original unabridged version? I know that they were anxious to preserve the legacy of the Gershwins, and so they wanted a critical edition of this. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that came to be?
I haven't been in connection with the George and Ira Gershwin Foundation or Trust, but with Mark Clegg. Yes, Mark Clegg came to many rehearsals in Cincinnati, and it was so beneficial for me and for the musicians of the orchestra to hear about his deep knowledge and also his deep love for George Gershwin's work. And I learned so much. You know, I, like many people on this planet, first time I heard a recording of An American in Paris was the Leonard Bernstein with the New York Phil, which I still love, actually. But you have this very swinging with this sort of inegal rhythm, which is so seducing. But Mark Clegg told us, you know, the swing came in the 40s. In the 20s, swing didn't exist. It was ragtime. So he made me listen to the Gershwin himself playing the reduction on the piano. There is also some very early recordings where Gershwin was supervising these recordings in 1928 or 9, I don't remember. And certainly there is no swing there. So having heard the composer's own performance on the piano, having heard the performance of orchestra supervised by the composer, I think that we had no choice but just follow his feeling, his view, his style.
A new recording called Transatlantic, featuring the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra with French conductor Louis Langres. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.